This is the story of the one. As head of maintenance at a concert hall, he knows the show must always go on. That's why he works behind the scenes, ensuring every light is working, the HVAC is humming, and his facility shines. With Grainger's supplies and solutions for every challenge he faces, plus 24/7 customer support, his venue never misses a beat. Call quickgrainger.com or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.
This is the story of the one. As a custodial supervisor at a high school, he knows that during cold and flu season, germs spread fast. It's why he partners with Grainger to stay fully stocked on the products and supplies he needs, from tissues to disinfectants to floor scrubbers. Also that he can help students, staff, and teachers stay healthy and focused. Call 1-800-GRAINGER, click Grainger.com, or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.
PHL Nation, I have one simple favor. It's more important than a subscription or like or anything like that, because Laborde Therapy Center, they're up for the Best of Acadiana Best Physical Therapy Clinic Award. Click the top link in the description right now for them to win, baby. Go vote, and you can win up to $250. Yes, Laborde Therapy. Our coverage wouldn't be possible this year without them. Link is in the description. And also, if you're in the need for anything physical therapy, book today, LaborTherapy.com. Let's freaking go. We're going to talk about Weston Davis tonight and how he needs to step up for LSU. I'm looking at you in the face right now because we do have some breaking news involving a pretty big player in LSU versus Clemson. And the good news for you is that it does not involve LSU. So we go out to friend of the channel. I say friend. I hope he still loves us. Mr. Matt Moscona. He has this report right here that Clemson all ACC offensive lineman Walker Parks was injured in a scrimmage and reportedly on crutches. Dabo obviously updated his status on Thursday. So we click this link right here. And this is via Matt Moscona. Shout out to our buddy Chris Marler, who writes for this site. And starting right guard Walker Parks couldn't scrimmage Thursday as Clemson continues preparation for LSU in the season opener. Dabo Swinney says he will be good to go. He didn't go today. We held him out, but he will be all right. So what does this mean for LSU? Does this mean anything at all? Because, you know, I tend to like to focus on us instead of them. And then week of, we start focusing more on them. That's how a lot of game prep actually works, right? You don't start working for that team until roughly 2 weeks, maybe a week before when you start installing the game plan. That's how we normally operate here on PHL for season openers. Look, lower body injuries in the spring always need to be taken with a grain of salt. Always. Now, why is that? Well, sometimes, and this is more so in the NFL than in college, what they will do is they will precautionarily let a player rest and claim it is soreness or an injury when they're actually fine. Now, why do they do that? Well, imagine if you're the rest of the team and you look at the rest of the team and you say, yeah, we're just going to rest so-and-so because we just want to save him for the actual season. It could send a bad message to the rest of the team, right? This is happening at Seattle Seahawks camp where Kenneth Walker, who is an often injured running back for Michigan State, they have him labeled for soreness as to why they're leaving him out of practice, when in actuality, it's load management. So it's not as important in college where everybody's younger, but Walker Parks is a year six offensive lineman. And you guys know how I feel about year six players. I don't think they should exist. I mean, I think they should exist as people, but not as college football players. So I do think, based on what Dabo says, now I need to go listen to the actual clip. This did just break. Maybe he is more injured and Dabo is just trying to save face. There's so many different things going on here. But you know what else is happening? LSU has had to deal with their lower body injuries. Garrett Nussmeier had a small one. Aaron Anderson had a small one. And obviously, they have been in varying degrees of braces. And Aaron in particular was left out of practice. So once again, every practice report you hear, even all the way down to injuries, unless it is serious, you should always take with a grain of salt. Now, something else that I think is very important regarding that is I do think he might not be fully healthy for the first game and actually play. That's actually really good for LSU because the defensive line actually has looked really good, and I do think this defensive line for LSU should be pretty good next year. Okay? Now, we tie to so many different beautiful viewers. Blanche, the five Tiger bros, answer LSU, Clemson, Auburn, Mizzou, Memphis. Sherry Berry, good to see you. Jace Max in the chat. We will see him once again in Monroe this weekend. Jace Max is coming. We're setting up for the Parks Card Show in Monroe, Louisiana at the Monroe Civic Center. And I'll be there bright and early, 9 a.m. We hope to see you there. It's a show that only costs $2 to enter. You wear a jersey, you get in free. If you're a kid, you get in free. So it's always worth it. I'm giving out LSU cards to everybody that swings by the booth and says they listen to PHL. So you're getting your money back, even if you have to pay the $2. So really freaking excited about this weekend show. We just left Shreveport. All good. Okay. Mike Scarborough will join us tonight here in roughly 20 or so minutes. This is one of, if not the biggest LSU writers ever. And I'm going to explain why a little bit later. Okay. Now, next thing, I want to talk about five sleepers for LSU in terms of how big they are to this team. Okay. So the first thing that I want to do involving this LSU roster is understand that this is indeed a good roster. I don't think this roster is absolutely loaded everywhere, but I do agree with the notion that this roster very much could be the deepest that Brian Kelly has had. But the guy that I really want to focus on of these five that we will talk about in the next 10 minutes is Weston Davis. So 6'7", 317, you know, when he came into LSU and as a prospect, he wasn't the heaviest guy. I kind of like that because he was a nimble offensive lineman. That was always his claim to fame. Go back and look at his basketball highlights. He's got some serious juice, right? And out of Beaumont, Texas, this was a very competitive recruitment. LSU beat out Texas A&M for him. And he very well could be the single most important player to this offense outside of Garrett Nussmeier. You could make the case that LSU at offensive tackle, it's just going to be so big. Because while we can struggle with who the best guards are and who the best left guard could be, the truth is Weston Davis and Tyree Adams, who will be the second player that we'll talk about, there's not a whole lot of offensive tackle depth, right? So, look, I am of the belief that Weston Davis is going to have a fantastic season. Some of that is me being hopeful, so we'll see. Tyree Adams is a guy that's actually started games. Tyree Adams is also someone that's been through.
This is the story of the one. As head of maintenance at a concert hall, he knows the show must always go on. That's why he works behind the scenes, ensuring every light is working, the HVAC is humming, and his facility shines. With Grainger's supplies and solutions for every challenge he faces, plus 24/7 customer support, his venue never misses a beat. Call quickgrainger.com or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.
Real adversity. We use that word quite a bit, but this is the adversity that Tyree Adams has gone through. So he comes in, and he was a part of the Lance Hurd recruiting class. So he was obviously the less talked about elite offensive tackle that they brought in the crop. He was a middle tier four-star recruit from St. Aug, obviously one of the best producers of talent ever. At any school, at any state. Obviously, there's a lot of St. Aug influence on the staff. So, as a true freshman, there was no way for him to play. Because if you're an offensive tackle and you're a true freshman, you're obviously not going to play a Will Campbell. You're obviously not going to play a Ramry Jones. And the first offensive tackle off the bench was Lance Hurd. So, the whole plan was for him to redshirt his first year, which is essentially what he did. And then we go into year two. So year two, Tyree Adams sets himself up as being one of the more important reserve offensive linemen on this team, with Lance Hurd hitting the transfer portal and going to Tennessee. So what happened to Tyree Adams? Well, he has a medical condition midway through the season, and he had to have a surgery, and that made him unavailable, and that's what led to Paul Mbenga, partially led to Paul Mbenga being the first offensive lineman off the bench when Garrett Dellinger got hurt. To me, Tyree Adams' high school tape was really good. Really good. So the thing about this, and we've gone on rants about this that make a lot of sense to me, but I'm not sure makes a lot of sense to our audience, is you should always make sure that if a player does not have success at a prior stop and they transfer over, or if a player didn't have success in the first couple of seasons and they magically become a starter, it's important to ask why. All right. Tyree Adams has legit whys as to why he did not play, right? First year, impossible. Second year, really crazy medical situation. And now he's at left tackle, going up against a ton of NFL defensive ends, learning from Will Campbell, learning from Emory Jones, learning from Brian Kelly, learning from Brad Davis. This could be the breakout star for LSU this year. 6'7", 310, has NFL measurables, is an adult. I know that doesn't sound like a whole lot, but look, that matters to me. And it's important to point out that you really need Tyree Adams to be that guy, because you have Ethan Callaway. He's not really made a whole lot of news, and he was a pretty high-profile recruit, middle-tier four-star. And Ori Williams at 6'8", 335 out of Texas, a ridiculously talented athlete. You know, he was more of a three-star player. He's not really done a whole lot up to this point. So Weston Davis and Tyree Adams, two of the five players I want to talk about here to begin this live stream. Okay? Let's go to Alexander. Weston Davis was, to him, the biggest question mark going into the spring, and it turns out both guards will be the issue. Okay. Yeah, I mean, y'all, I mean, the Weston Davis storyline is just going to be so big. It really, really, really is. I honestly feel fine about him. I don't feel, like, overly confident either way. You know, this fall camp is, in particular, more important for him to me than Tyree Adams, just because Tyree Adams has played more. But I would also include, and it is vital to this conversation, that there are some days where Weston Davis just can't block anybody. And there's going to be days when you're going up against pros like Jack Pyburn and Patrick Payton in particular. Okay. Alexander said Bo Bartolon started at right tackle in the bowl game over Davis. Yeah, it's something. I think, what was that entire offensive line? Yeah, was Bartolon a guard or tackle? I'd have to go back and look. And then Sam follows up, one of our many patrons. I'm super high on Tyree. I like our length at both tackles. There you go. Okay. We keep it moving. I don't need a pause there. I do not need a pause at all there. Okay. Now, we get to me, one of the more, I guess you could say, crowded rooms. Kalaj Cobbins. This is a deeper cut sleeper. And you can actually point to quite a few of the defensive ends who are buried on the depth chart right now. All right. So this is all going to be one player of the five that we break down. All right. I've written down here defensive ends for five players. Okay. Now, it's going to be hard for Kalaj Cobbins to get some snaps versus Clemson. I do think, though, in week two, LSU is going to experiment with quite a few different edge players because it is a logjam at this position. So you have Dylan Carpenter there. He's a year older than Kalaj Cobbins. You also have, obviously, Cobbins. Damian Shanklin was an early enrollee. I've met Damian. I met him at the spring game not too long ago. Not this last one, but the one before it. Coming in from Indianapolis. Not really a whole lot of news coming out about him. You know, it does look as if he's going to be more of a year two type of guy. But who is the sleeper defensive end going to be? Is there going to be one in general? Once again, and I've shared this before, but I'll share it again now. Rarely at LSU has there been a surprise edge. Normally the edge guys that you think are going to be the guys are the guys during the course of the season, right? Yes, you had Arden Key as a true freshman be like, and you're like, whoa, that dude is being shot out of a cannon. But rarely is it anyone that just comes out of nowhere. Maybe this is a year. I mean, that's the crazy part of football. You could be so focused on the big names. And right now, the big names are Pyburn, Payton, obviously friend of the show, Gabriel Relaford, and Jamari Butler. Those have been the guys. But can a sleeper just out of nowhere? Can a sleeper emerge there? Because here's the thing. I think of the ends that LSU has, I think Jack Pyburn is going to have a fantastic season, in particular versus the run. I also think Patrick Payton is going to have a good season. I also think a guy like we just mentioned, friend of the channel, Gabriel Relaford, is going to have a good season. But I don't know if any of those three are just this ridiculous bender, if you will, right? A guy that'll just fly off the edge and make plays. They're a little bit more well-rounded types of players. Can you get somebody, because Cobbins has that in his range of outcomes, being a pass rusher who is just flying off the edge with his hair on fire. And then if you want to go even deeper, what about C.J. Jackson out of North Carolina? Or is he out of Georgia? Either way, he switches to number 14. You get a lower digit, baby. You got to go out there and start making some plays. So this defensive end room is very deep. And as many of you know, I am a massive, massive, massive fan of the coaching staff at the defensive line position for LSU. In particular, Kevin Peoples. So I trust Kevin Peoples every year at LSU from this point forward to get a lot of juice out of the orange of at least one player on the LSU defensive end crew. In his first season, Savion Jones gets drafted really high by the Broncos. Braden Swinson has the best year of his career. So I am really, 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 really excited about this room. I am. Okay. Sam, thank you for the super chat. We move along with our five players. Once again, Clemson has an offensive lineman, Mr. Parks, Weston Parks. But the boot on his foot, is it really going to be anything? Dabo Swinney says he's fine. Now let's go to a fourth player here, and that is Devon Keyes. I want to talk about Devon for a little bit. All right. This is what I like to consider to be a high floor player in Devon Keyes. He came in and steadied the ship last year for LSU at the linebacker position. True freshman, off ball. You know, one thing I look for, and I might just be a sucker for this, and it is something as a high school player, they played him at running back. You know, that's one of my favorite things about Deuce Gerald. It's part of the reason why I like Brandon Brown. It was part of the reason why I was super high on Whit Weeks. If I, as a high school coach, know that you are so damn athletic that I want to give you actual touches. Now, it's one thing if you're doing this at low eight-man, 20 total player on the roster in bumfrick North Dakota high school level football, but Devon Keyes played in Texas, right? And there are small schools in Texas, but his running back stuff is actually good. So what do we make of Devon Keyes? Had some adversity. Florida game was brutal in many ways. Dropped a very key interception. So what does he do? Follows that up with a few good performances to close the season. A pick six, which is always good for the confidence, even though it was a drop that went right to him. I like Devon Keyes. I really, really, really do. Now, here's the thing. Does he have the high-end Demond Clark, Whit Weeks type of potential? Probably not. But you can win at linebacker with just good, right? You could play in the NFL for a long time with just good. We might not need you to be Devon White or Devin White. We might just need you to be solid. A Jacob Cutrera type of player. How about that? You want to go deep? You know, you want to go deep? Naming random LSU linebackers? As long as he's not DJ Welter, you're going to be good. Okay? I think there's a better chance of Devon Keyes playing the second most snaps on linebacker at the linebacker position behind only Whit Weeks than you would like to think. Right? So Devon Keyes is someone that's flying a little under the LSU radar. But I just like those types of football players. I really, really, really do. All right. Now, we go to the next player. And boy, oh boy, I'm telling you right now, LSU desperately, and I mean desperately, could use number 10, Deshaun Spears, having a big season. And this is multifaceted. Deshaun Spears, Denham Springs High School, from your own backyard, elite athleticism scores, right? His spark testing in high school really shot himself up recruiting boards. He ended up being a top 100 recruit. So why is it Deshaun Spears? Well, I'm just going to say it. Deshaun Spears has doubters. Deshaun Spears has doubters. And I am one of them to a certain degree. Because LSU went out into the portal and said, look, we have got to go get safeties. We have just got to go get safeties. And it was interesting that Deshaun Spears did what he did in the early portion of LSU's season last year and didn't play all that much the rest of the way. Now, what did he do? Well, he made one of the better touchdown-saving tackles I have seen an LSU Tiger make versus South Carolina early in that game. And it was freaking Raheem Rocket Sanders, who weighs 256 gazillion pounds and runs a 4.8. All right, he's not the fastest guy, but for some reason, he's got a home run hitting speed. He'll run your ass over. Deshaun Spears is a fearless young man. He does have a sideline-to-sideline profile. It would be nice for one of our four-star or better Louisiana defensive backs to be a BAMF. It would be so nice because in the old days, it was a damn guarantee that if you were a top 150 four-star or better defensive back from the state of Louisiana, that you were going to be something. And once again, these are some of the deeper cut players. We are not asking anyone that we have mentioned up to this point. We are not asking any one of them to be Tyrann Mathieu. Okay?
Now, trying to lose weight? It's time to try Hers. At forhers.com/foryou, you can access affordable doctor-trusted weight loss treatments tailored just for you. These include oral medication kits or compounded GLP-1 injections. Through Hers, pricing for oral medication kits start at just $69 a month for a 10-month plan when paid in full upfront. No hidden fees, no membership fees. You shouldn't have to go out of your way to feel like yourself. Hers brings expert care straight to you with 100% online access to personalized treatment plans that put your goals first. Reach your weight loss goals with help through Hers. Get started at forhers.com/foryou to access affordable doctor-trusted weight loss plans. That's forhers.com/foryou, forhers.com/foryou. Paid for by Hims and Hers Health. Weight loss by Hers is not available everywhere. Compounded products are not FDA approved or verified for safety, effectiveness, or quality. Prescription required. Restrictions at forhers.com apply.
Now, what's holding Deshaun Spears back? Well, it's the transfers. This is going to be the Tamarcus Cooley, AJ Halsey, Tamarcus Cooley, AJ Halsey, and Jordan Gilbert show at safety. This is the older safety room. All right. And Deshaun Spears is going to say, look, I'm younger. I'm faster than probably all three of those safeties. I can be that guy. I can bring DBU back to prominence. I can tell the world that if I'm a four-star defensive back from Louisiana, especially from Baton Rouge, I'm going to be that guy. So what has Deshaun Spears done in practice? It's been up and down, a few good breakups here and there. But the thing I like about it is no one's talking about him. You know, of the young defensive backs, DJ Pickett, rightfully so, is sucking up all the oxygen. Something else I like about Deshaun Spears in his situation is there are so many young defensive backs chomping at the bit to play over. You got Bradford from Catholic High. You got Jace Thomas, son of a New Orleans Saints, a former Saint, who's on this team. Y'all, I really, really, really am cheering for Deshaun Spears as much as anyone on this defense. Okay? He's got a shot, man. He's got a shot. I'm just going to say, Tamarcus Cooley, the spring for him in particular was tough. The fall has been better, all right? I'll say it was tough-ish for Cooley. And then I've heard in the fall it's been better. I like Cooley a lot. I like AJ Halsey a lot, all right? Now, y'all don't understand. We have got the godfather of LSU recruiting coverage. I'm going to explain to him why what he has done is truly impressive at TigerBait.com. He's coming up here in just a moment. And I hate that he's got to deal with the man that gave me one of my first radio jobs, Buddy Sanji. He's got to deal with Buddy Sanji all the damn time. Buddy Sanji. Buddy is really good friends with Mr. John Sibley Butler, who's a big supporter of ours. I'm kidding, man, dude. I freaking love me some Buddy Sanji, too. Beside of Lance, Crossroads. Let's go to Jared. Yeah. I'll text Cole if y'all want him to be on the show. Cole's been a friend of mine for a very long time. We had like a 2-hour phone conversation. I'd love for Cole to be on here. Absolutely, positively adore for Cole Kublik to be on the show. Okay. So there you go. Now, coming up next, Mr. Mike Scarborough will join us here on PHO Live. Quick break. And don't forget, I mean, it is so critical. This is the final day that you can do this very important thing for our friends at Labor Therapy Center. PHL Nation, I have one simple favor. It's more important than a subscription or like or anything like that, because Labor Therapy Center, they're up for the Best of Acadiana Best Physical Therapy Clinic Award. Click the top link in the description right now for them to win, baby. Go vote and you can win up to $250. Yes, Labor Therapy. Our coverage wouldn't be possible this year without them. Link is in the description. And also, if you're in the need for anything physical therapy, book today, labortherapy.com. Mike Scarborough is his name, man. And here's what's interesting. You started your career doing what?
Started off in Lafayette on radio. I'm driving around and, of course, grew up in Baton Rouge and ended up in Lafayette helping run my father's medical equipment business. And while also going to college after a year at LSU. And I'm driving around town and I hear a new sports talk station crop up and I'm listening. And, of course, over there, they weren't talking a whole lot of LSU, but when they attempted to, I thought they were getting most of it wrong. So I became a frequent caller into this particular show. And then eventually one afternoon, I called the station manager and suggested that we do an LSU show, and that's how it started, 1992.
There you go. And then you got into the writing and the websites.
The website was 1995, I think.
God.
And all it was at the time was an AOL members page. And that started off within a few 2 or 3 months was getting at the time, which was huge, almost 10,000 hits a day.
Let's go.
You got to realize in the mid-90s, that was big. And parlayed that into starting Purple and Gold magazine with a partner. Realized that I needed to go back to doing it on my own and left that after 6 months. And I was then became the first publisher to ever sign with Shannon Terry. And you know the history of Shannon Terry.
Yeah,
with, three or four networks. That was Alliance Sports. And there's a whole history of Rivals 1.0 Seattle that went belly up with the internet crash in 2000. Then the guys in Nashville buying the assets and the name out of bankruptcy court and restarting it as 2.0. And then three or four networks later, and then I went independent in 2018 almost 20 years at Rivals.
Okay. So that's why it's fascinating, because you've done the independent stuff and then you start the website and then you're with the Rivals things and now you have your own site. So you've done it all. You've done the big company website, and then you've also done like the Dandy Don, right? You're just your own, own thing.
The dirty little secret about being a website, you're almost like the franchisee of that network's site. So right. There's an LSU franchise, there's an Ohio State franchise. And for the longest time, they took half the money.
I have no idea how that works. Yeah.
Yeah. There's some benefits to being on a network. You can, you've got regional guys and you can, if you have nothing that day, you probably got a regional ass that wrote something that changes your front page for you. But it's most of the people on the networks don't own their own site. There's a handful, but most don't. I own the name Tiger Bait. So that was going with me no matter what.
Yeah.
But, But at the end of the day, what do you own if you're a member of those networks? I don't know. No, I'll say this. Knowing what I know now, I would have went independent in 2011.
Yeah. I mean, I love the big sites. I really do. I'm always going to be a fan. I'm glad Rivals is like big again now, especially if you're a recruiting nerd of yesteryear. But it's so different now that you can just be your own independent entity. And for you, what's the biggest challenge in doing sports media now since you've done it, you know, for so long?
I think the biggest thing now is that you have to be very diversified. For my almost 20-year run. Well, it's actually more than 20 years on a network. Your main income was subscription revenue. All right. Now you've got most of it shared ad revenue. Google ads are all over all the websites, regardless. We got them on ours. You've got them on network sites. So it's all about community and building your message board and keeping that. But you better have a darn good YouTube channel. You better have a good Facebook channel. You better have a presence on X. You need to have sponsorships. And, instead of having one income stream, you better have multiple.
Right. Yeah. Yeah, yeah. I'm very strong in YouTube, but I'm not as good as like the writing and all the stuff that you and Preston and those guys do. And I the bottom line was I was tired of Preston being on the show, and I was like, I'll get somebody else at Tiger Bait. That was it.
Well, being tired of Preston is not a new thing.
Yeah, it's easy to do.
No, I'm mess.
Me and
Preston go at each other pretty hard. It's a Gen X versus millennial thing most of the time.
I wish you could have seen him because, he's a big star rating guy. And so someone in my chat said stars don't matter when he was on here a few weeks ago. And then he went on because Preston done ran about a lot of stuff. But the stars don't matter thing is
getting him on a Friday night to go out to a high school game a lot of times is pulling teeth. But when it was the shiny object March Arch Manning at St. Thomas Aquinas and Hammond, that was easy.
Yes,
that was easy.
No problem. So this is what's interesting because I want to talk about what you've seen at practice, but I more so want to talk about recruiting, right? Like you're doing the daily grind of actually doing recruiting updates and stuff. Obviously, the big one here is this KJ Edwards push. I'm not as sourced in as you are. Right? You know all these people, but I do know like LSU loved this running back. This was Frank's guy, reminded him of Caden in many ways. Do you think this is possible that LSU could flip this top 100 back from A&M back to LSU?
Well, you've got to get him in for a visit. And look, it's not just that position. You're going to have to make a run at a quarterback and really start playing the game in your mind is what is your there's conversations that we have off the record. And I have a pretty good sense that they have a slot of, whether it's their quarterback room, their running back financial obligations, et cetera. Each thing has its own number. And so because of the way the things have transpired, you had Bryce Underwood, because you had Bryce Underwood committed, all your 2026 quarter offers that you had, they were talking to you. Yeah, they came for a visit and came to camp, but they really weren't really giving you much serious consideration because you had Bryce Underwood committed. He falls by the wayside, and now you're trying to have play makeup. I thought Dia Bell for a period of time looked like he would have loved to have been an LSU Tiger. He ends up at Texas. Obviously, the last one that was the biggest push was Bo Bentley. But who's it going to be in October or November that you start getting wind on a Thursday or a Friday that they're coming in for official visit? And maybe your source is telling you, whatever you do, please don't put it out until they've absolutely arrived on campus because we don't want the coaches at whatever particular school. Yeah. Shutting it down before he gets to campus. But LSU now has to play spoiler at running back and at quarterback. I mean, look, I was making the suggestion throughout early spring that I thought running back was a position that they needed to go look at getting one in the portal. Would they get one in the portal? And people were looking at me like I had a horn coming out of my forehead. and now with JT Lindsey's situation, I mean, look, man, you've been watching LSU football. I mean, there's been seasons, not more than a few, where you've had multiple running backs unavailable in particular game weeks. What then? So you're moving Juwan Johnson back again? Had you gone to the portal? So,
yeah, they're in trouble. I'm with you on the dude. They are. If God forbid one of those backs go down, you're in a lot of trouble.
Well, I mean, but the thing about it is, it's like you can say that about multiple positions. I mean, we obviously know about the quarterback situation, running back. You've got a legit Heisman Trophy candidate in Garrett Nussmeier, and you've got a legit all SEC running back in Caden Durham. I like what I've seen out of Caleb Jackson and Harlan Berry, but there's still some unknowns of both and some youth in Berry's case. But boy, you're an injury or two away from starting to sweat. One injury and you're starting to sweat.
Yeah. I don't think people realize like how big a guy like Caleb Jackson can be for you, right? Because he proved last year he can catch them out of the backfield. So I'm hoping more out of Caleb. Because you know so much more about recruiting than I do, this is a burning question. I have never in my life, Mike, taken so many 2027 questions or the recruiting class, not this next one, but the next one. So how do you view LSU's position with the 2027 quarterback class?
Well, obviously we've filmed and gone out and looked at Elijah Haven a ton because he's here. We obviously know all about Colton with Garrett being here and Colton Nussmeier. Peyton Houston at 5'10 and a quarter is also at the top of the board. I've tried to be get it out of sources. What does the board really look like, you know, for the last year for 27 with, you know, having multiple in-state? Have had no luck with that. But man, when you hear my source telling me the other day that LSU never really led or was high on or Haven never really had LSU that high in his thoughts, or that LSU has never been a front runner for him. That's kind of shocking, but it's early. Let's see how it plays out. Look, this whole roster is going to turn over in December.
Yeah,
I mean, I joked about it last night. It's like Lexus, December to remember, and what they did last December. Austin Thomas and Frank Wilson, all of them, a fantastic portal haul, which is why this LSU football team, when you start talking about ceiling and floor, ceiling for this team, I think legitimately is national championship contender. The schedule doesn't do you any favors, which we beat that to death all off season. But this team has it all. I don't think there's any team in the top 10 that doesn't have a concern at a couple of spots, and LSU is no different than them. We talk about offensive line nonstop, but bottom line is, getting back to the question, worrying about 27 quarterbacks, you're obviously going to have to go in the portal and get a top-notch national quarterback in the transfer portal. On top of whatever you get from the high school class. And is there a scenario at that spot where you don't necessarily steal a 26 high school senior away from somebody that's committed elsewhere? You just go straight portal. Yeah. And if you go straight portal, you probably need to have someone there that's definitely at midterm, so you have them there in the spring.
Yeah.
And if you do that, how does that affect Colin Hurley and Van Buren, what is their thought process? You know, then you start talking about that you need another one in the portal if you don't get a high school kid. So this is all you can agree. You let me know if you think I'm right, but this is all the domino effect of what Bryce Underwood, you thought you had your quarterback for the future, and it lined up perfectly with having a 25 quarterback, maybe do something middle tier for 26 had Underwood been here, and then 27 go big again with the local kid, Haven or Nussmeier or Peyton Houston. You still got the Ziegler kid up in Benton that, you know, that a lot of people want, and let's see what kind of senior year he has.
Right. I am so high on Peyton Houston. I did it. What he has done already is just insane when it comes to production. Now, it's not the be all end all, obviously, but Mike, I'm going to be honest. I'm looking for that big transfer portal quarterback. All right. Like I'm like, man, Aiden Childs kind of makes sense. What if Darian Minso wants to come back to Louisiana? What if Walker Howard, that would be the most insane story of all time if he lights it up at Louisville.
I think a lot of people are gonna be watching Walker Howard. You know, I joke, you know, because it's not an exact science. I thought at times during high school that Arch Manning was, you know, no higher than a low four star. Walker Howard to me was the best high school quarterback I ever saw in Louisiana. And, of course, look, Josh Booty put up big numbers in the 90s and Peyton, Manning and so forth, but I'm
better than Ryan,
And Ryan Perilou, but you know, but I'm mainly thinking this century, okay. not including the 90s. Walker Howard and Ryan Perilou. And so it's like, man, if Walker Howard is not first team all Sun Belt, I give up rating quarterbacks from. Yeah.
I'm so excited. I've kept up with the Walker. Actually, I still have a lot of his cards. That's how much I like them. I'm with you on that, man. I'll be paying attention. I just got to. We'll get to some current LSU stuff. But your recruiting mind is just always vast. Preston told me you're always thinking about not only what's next, but the next domino.
Well, so, and here's the thing. Yeah. I don't know if you notice. If you hear me pipe up, it seems like every year since BK's been here. And because he continues to say he wants to build the program with high school players. And I know that that's the desire, but man, when you look, okay, what are you going to sign? 21, 22 tops high school kids. Does it go over 22? When you get what you need, for your class of 26, and then you look at everything that you're going to lose at its starting positions.
Yeah.
You're going to have that December to Remember part two. And it'd be big with a quarterback and big with a running back, et cetera. Edge rushers. Yeah.
Yeah.
You're going to have all of that. And then some. Yeah, it's not like I'm thinking of the doomsday scenario, but it's like, boy, if you're 9-3 and you don't make the playoffs and you lose all of that and you're looking for and you're thinking about what, I mean, you've probably done it on your show, right? I mean, think about, look at are you thinking ahead to the 26 roster and what's there and what you have to replace? It's going to be a huge task. And look, you got to be confident about it because look what they just did.
Yeah.
I think there's a lot to be excited about. I think Austin Thomas and Frank Wilson and everybody that they've got in there, Jeff Martin's back in the building.
Good.
Jeff. Petito. That roster of staffers is a who's who of anybody that you would want to get it done. And they've obviously budgeted correctly. I mean, look at some of these wins they've had. You know, it's you're going head to head with the correct peer group when you're beating out Oregon for players and so forth. Now there's going to be a one off like a Jace Matthews that ends up at Auburn, but yeah, it's they're going toe to toe with everybody.
Yeah, I and Kelvin Bolden, if I'm saying his name correctly, coming over from Ole Miss, was one of Lane's top guys, as well. Your thoughts on you know, obviously you've been talking about the portal, but with NIL and the $20.5 million, do you think that's changed anything as far as recruiting? Or I'm sure it has, but what changes do you think it's really caused? Because now you have to look at, hey, if I want to win out for Deuce Gerald, how much of this is it going to cost? Have you seen that, and have you heard people talk about that?
Yeah, man, it's look, I know there's multiple guys that we've been talking about that are going to be starters on this team that they got in the portal that someone said to me that the rumors on the street that it was X amount for this particular player, and it ended up being that amount. Or maybe it was that amount, but that player took less because it was LSU versus somebody else. There's several kids, I'm not going to name them, that fall into that category. So they've done a fantastic job of knowing, is it somebody you can get? Can we get the money for it? And look, man, I admit to being skeptical more than I should at times. But, man, they really have hit all the right buttons at LSU in that regard. Now, the Bayou traditions versus revenue sharing and all that stuff, I still think there's some other dominoes to fall. And, you know, to me, the revenue sharing is basically just the league minimum. That's minimum wage. And you're going to have to go above and beyond. But, you know, it's going to be interesting to see, you know, I keep, you know, you think going back to the quarterback situation, if you've got to go out and get a stellar marquee quarterback to be your guy. And to me, it has to be along the lines of, you know, of course you didn't know what he was going to end up being, but when you went out and got Jaden Daniels, it has to be in that realm of guy to come in for next year. And so if you do that and then you have to turn right around and you're in a battle for your 27 high school prospect, you know, so how much do you have to spend on quarterbacks? What is that top line budget? That's to me is the only worry when you're not able to stagger them over an every other year type of scenario. Right. Where, yeah.
Right. And what Mike is essentially saying is, you got to double dip into what you need to promise your QB, and that could be tough divvying up everything else.
But it works out fine. It works out fine if the quarterback that you get in the portal is a 1 year only,
right?
You know, because it's. But you probably, when you think about it, you probably would like a guy that's like Jaden Daniels, where he actually has two, because you're going to be right back in that situation again, where your second best quarterback is a true freshman. You know, that's why they went out and got Jaden Daniels. They wanted some experience.
Yeah.
So that's why I think it's going to be a you're going to see multiple transfer portal guys brought in, and that's hard to do. Quarterbacks are transferring in because they want to play.
Yeah, and that's why Oklahoma got, you know, the new Venmo spokesman John Mateer. They can run it back next year with them if he's just like decent in his first year. Mike, you've been you go to all the practices. What has stood out that you think is, well, we need to be talking more about this?
Man, I think we've just about covered it all. I mean, when you get to this week in August, it gets to be where you're kind of talked out. Right. You've talked about everything forwards and backwards so many different ways until you have a news item like Garrett Nussmeier a week ago that scared the heck out of everybody. But for the most part, how many different ways can you talk about the worries of the offensive line? What is there to be excited about? Bernard Gooden. We've been talking about him. I just think defensive line wise, it's clearly the best that's been here since, and it's the best roster from top to bottom that BK has. I think if LSU is going to make the playoffs, Blake Baker's defense is going to need to be is going to be the difference. You know, if your offensive line is trying to find its way, and maybe they're still trying different combinations after, you know, 3 or 4 weeks in September, if you're going to be where you need to be, wins and losses at that point, it's going to be, you're going to need a lot from Blake Baker's defense in the takeaway category and holding teams down a bit. You know, I'm laughing, and I'm sure, I don't know if you talked about it earlier in your show, but someone's particularly after our show last night, someone sent me Matt Moscona's interview with Cole Kublik about the LSU offensive line, and maybe it, I'm hoping I didn't misinterpret, but did you see it?
No. And Cole's been a friend of mine. I've had a few people mention it a little bit earlier. But
yeah. I mean, you need to go see it, but it seemed to me that was he trying to suggest that the reason why LSU doesn't have a running game is because they don't commit to it, and come hell or high water, they're handing the ball off. He was suggesting that, and look, he's a former offensive line. He's plugged in. Probably the first guy he goes to in the building when he goes to each SEC school is the offensive line coach and sits in on those meetings if they allow it. I get it. But I don't know that I go as far as to say that the reason why LSU's running game has not been what Brian Kelly wants it to be is because they're typically too successful throwing the football. And in his, he said something to the effect, like, you can't expect a team to get third and one and third and two after you've, you know, thrown it six of the last seven plays and expect your offensive line all of a sudden to turn, flip the switch and be a bunch of road graders for your running back.
I'll happily go listen to it, and I'll get Cole on here. He's been, like I said, I talked to him for 2 hours on the phone earlier this year. But I don't know. I think what he's suggesting is maybe it's more of an issue of sequencing and Joe's run game story. Cause Cole is a big like sequencing guy, which makes sense because he's looking at it from an offensive line perspective where your job becomes harder if your runs become more predictable. Now, I'm a film guy. I don't know as much as he does, but the run game was very predictable. I think you know ball really well, Mike. So
yeah,
that might be what he's suggesting.
Well, and look, and you could see where I don't care who the offensive coordinator is, and whereas LSU has been blessed at wide receiver for decades now, and it's again, that's the case where you've got all these guys that are wanting their touches, and you want to make it exciting and get Aaron Anderson his, and you got Chris Hilton deep, and he's become everything that you thought he would be coming out of high school. And Barry and Brown and Nick Anderson and Kyle Parker and on and on and Tredez. And now you got Bauer Sharp, you know, yeah, you got Caden Durham, but it's like, do you run the risk of getting too cute by half because you've got all these weapons and you want to try and get it all in at the expense of your running game?
Yeah, I don't know. Yeah. Before I ask you this this next question, I wanted to play this this legendary piece of media.
Garrett Nussmeier, I swear, I said to somebody, it's almost like I think his balls have gotten even better with him with the knee brace.
Yeah. And I did it again the other day.
Oh God, you got paused, Mike. You got paused. Oh man,
huh? I'm gonna keep doing it. I said the other day for you eighth graders out there that are watching. Here we go again. Garrett Nussmeier had more pretty balls today. Did Preston put you up to that too? By the way,
yeah, of course, he sent me that. Yeah, he sent me that.
He's the eighth grader.
Yeah, but in your mind, you think Garrett has looked fine.
Dude, that's what I was kind of saying there was.
Yeah.
It's almost like his with the knee brace on the he's, man, he's had some really incredible throws. I think he's going to have a huge year. I just believe it. I'm going to ask you, I pose it on the show each week.
Yeah, bring it.
If LSU wins the toss, does BK defer?
I've heard him explain. He says no. That's why he doesn't like deferring, because, and I've pushed back on his actual math behind this, because he says a team that scores first wins more games. Well, that's true. That doesn't necessarily mean, though, that you getting the ball first means you're going to score first. Right. So I'm always a defer to the second half guy.
Yeah, you've got a quarterback, and even though he's an upper guy, been in the program for years and years, and that environment, first game of the season, huge game. You know, look, maybe you got a little idea in pregame warmups if balls are sailing because he's got so much adrenaline. But yeah, you're better off to deferring and you know, putting your defense on the field first. But my prediction is he takes the ball.
Yeah, I think so too. I think, you know, you look at LSU's most dominant game versus a team with a pulse was Arkansas, and they just drove down the field methodically, pitch and catch, just really good offense, dealt with some adversity, penalties, but they were still able to score. So I think I agree with that. I think BK will achieve. I'd say I haven't even thought about that yet. That's interesting. Mm-hmm. But before we skedaddle here, Mike Scarborough, you've obviously been doing this since 92. All right. So I was very, very, very young. Jared Addison, who's one of the top viewers, says, you made him feel old with that since 92 comment. So you've been through all these different head coaches. Your thoughts on Brian Kelly's, I guess you could say, outlook for this year. What are the floor requirements in your mind with this roster? Do you feel it's playoff or bust?
I think it's playoff or bust, but if it's bust, it's not like he's going anywhere.
Right.
You know, I'm predicting 9-3, but at predicting 9-3, I also have that as the floor. Usually if you predict 9-3, you might say the floor is 7-5. I just have a hard time believing with what they've got there, and knock on wood, that if there's no injuries, that this team goes 8-4 or 7-5. I just feel like I just don't believe that can happen. If everyone stays healthy with the schedule, but you win that game against Clemson, which is a task. I mean, they're 3.5-point favorite right now. It's not a neutral game. It's at their place, and they're number 4 in the country. It means everything to them, just like it does LSU, probably more so. But I think the ceiling is 11-1. You win that game, and it's legit. And look, even if you lose the game, I still think that this team is a playoff caliber team with all the ingredients to win a national championship.
Yeah, and here's my thing,
Mike. And that's saying that with the offensive line, that with the question marks. I think they've got enough bodies there that are talented, that that they're going to come along at some point. And you've got a quarterback who can get rid of it quickly. Bauer Sharp, Aaron Anderson, these guys, Xavion Thomas, and the things they're doing with him, getting the ball out to running backs on over pursuing edge rushers, and the things that we've seen since the spring. I think they've got some solutions for this while that offensive line gets their groove.
Mike Scarborough. I said Scarborough. Scarborough. Tigerbait.com is where you could find him. I really do appreciate it. I was always looking forward to this. My favorite part of this conversation was hearing your story. I had no idea that you started in radio. I really didn't. I don't think a lot of people do. They just associate you with the website.
Yeah, and the website came about just on a freak. It was we had to have a computer for medical billing in my dad's medical equipment business, and I logged in with one of those AOL discs and just started typing in, kind of similar to Dandy Don. You know, the next day stuff is on top of the last day, and people, and I'd add stuff to it each day, and people knew that that there was new info if I changed the color scheme.
Okay.
If the background was yellow and purple in the morning, then all of a sudden it was purple with yellow font, they knew that there was an update. And that's how it all got started.
There's nothing more iconic in internet lore than the AOL dial-up.
Well, I just saw in my Facebook feed that they were it's going away, that they're finally ending the dial-up at AOL in the next several months. I'm like, how is that still a thing? Shouldn't that have ended like 15 years ago at least? That's insane. 20 years ago. I'll say 15. But yeah, now with the fiber everywhere and yeah.
Please tell my friend, buddy, I said hello. And yeah, Mike, we'll keep up with everything that you're doing, man. We appreciate you.
Yeah, man, we'll be back out there tomorrow with another practice report. And we don't have any access Saturday. The scrimmage, the biggest scrimmage, and it's Saturday night in Tiger Stadium. It'll be interesting to see what comes out of that. Knock on wood, like Buddy says, do your rosary beads so that there's nothing injury-wise that comes out of that. Put Nussmeier and Caden Durham in bubble wrap.
Please.
And yeah, and then we'll see what kind of access we get next week. I think we might have a limited access next week, and then I think it's about to get shut down, and they're going to focus, get into game mode for Clemson maybe middle of next week. I'll be shocked if we have any late next week media availability as far as us being to go out to practice for a couple of periods.
Yeah, I hope you guys get to go because, you know, Michigan just shut it all off, right? I don't know. I've always gone back and forth on
no. And look, I'm for it. If he says, all right, it's time. And look, you can tell that they're starting to get ready. The other day at practice, of course, our cameras were down, but boy, they were getting after them. The clock is ticking. And of course, next week's going to be a big week for them to pull back and start getting their legs underneath them. School starts late. What does it start? Two Mondays from now. So they're probably gonna start working on Clemson middle to end of next week, I'm assuming.
Yeah, I would figure that as well. And like you told me when I was trying to get you on here, this has been a fluid practice schedule as far as like y'all are concerned. Do you think that's fair?
Yeah, that's fair. And look, never gonna complain about what Brian Kelly has given us.
Right.
I've been covering it since the Hallman years, and no football coach has given us the type of access that Brian Kelly has as far as, you know, the 3-4 periods that's been typical since Saban, but then letting us stay with cameras off for the remainder of it. That's crazy. It's been great. And I personally thanked him for it. It's really great access, gives the coordinators, every spring and fall camp. And, look, man, you've got a lot of great people on that staff. You got a lot of great people in that building. You got a lot of great players on this football team. I think they put it together to have a big time year. And look, man, from a media perspective, it's a lot more fun to cover a winning team than it is one that's, you know, there's nothing worse than a 9-3 football team because it's good, but it's not good enough. And, you know, we can debate all you want about whether a 9-3 team's getting in the playoffs. I don't believe they are.
Interesting.
We'll see. But it's how many teams are going to be there and what does your tiebreaker look like? That's why I keep going back to that Oklahoma game at the end of the year. That game, I think LSU is a superior team from top to bottom, but it's at their place. That could be the end all be all right there, that game.
And it could be cold.
Yeah. And you saw what they did Alabama at home.
You saw what Alabama did to LSU in Tiger Stadium, and LSU humiliated Oklahoma, and now they get LSU at home. And if that game decides whether LSU's a playoff team or not, and they can play spoiler, heck, who knows what their record might be at that point? I keep looking at that one. It's like, you know, you take care of business, or you let's say you the opener doesn't go your way, and you drop one more somewhere in there, and you're got that second loss. Look, they're all pivotal. I keep looking at that one though, and that one's when you start asking me, is it Florida? Is it at Ole Miss? That Oklahoma game for me is the one that I keep looking at.
Is there any SEC team that you're higher or lower on going into this next year? And it could be someone that's not on LSU schedule.
Well, if you're going to say the next tier after LSU, whether it, in that middle of the SEC, is there someone that's going to elevate? Who's that team going to be? Is it South Carolina? Is it Texas A&M? Who is there a team that can surprise? That's a lot of people have towards the back end of the top 25. Is it Missouri? You know, who always seems to have a favorable schedule?
Oh yeah.
I think Texas A&M could be that team.
Interesting.
But I don't know. I tend to think it's probably going to go to form, and then, you know, is it LSU and Alabama flipping spots? I think Texas loses right out to shoot to Ohio State. So, you know, they could be in the same situation as LSU trying to claw back.
Have you ever asked a question at a presser and regretted it?
No, but there's been other questions in the room that have made me uncomfortable from other folks.
Maybe so.
Maybe there has been, and I just don't recall, or maybe I thought to myself, yeah, that I didn't do that one right, but I moved on.
So I used to do what you did. I would go to all the press conferences, as you know, and there were some wild ones at Lunch with Les. There were some wild ones thrown Les Miles way that I'm like, if Twitter and Twitter was around then, but if it was like it is now, I'd be like, dang, dude, what kind of question is that? It's not Les related. It's just there were some that made me uncomfortable too. So I'll back you up with that. I'll also say this. Were you at the Johnny Jones introductory press conference?
I think I was.
Yeah, I would guess you were there, right? Because you know it was a big deal that Johnny Jones, one of Dale's guys, was coming back to be the head coach at LSU. And I shat you not, one of his former coaches or players was there. He had his leg crossed, and he had a gun stuffed in his sock. I was like, this guy had to have been in his 60s. I've never seen this man before. And literally, it was one of those grandpa socks. And he had a gun stuffed. I've never even shared this story on PHL. And my radio co-host at the time, Micah Bedard, saw it. I was like, Micah, is that really a pistol? But yeah, what's the craziest thing? What is the wildest thing you've seen at a press conference or game that you covered?
I don't know if there was anything wild. I remember it got really uncomfortable with DiNardo at the end, that last Southern Miss loss, and it was a foregone conclusion that he was done. You bring up Johnny Jones, and it's they've got to get that basketball situation fixed. I asked somebody the day, give me your top three hires in the last 25 years, this century, that were the biggest waste of time in the major sports at LSU. And I maintain that
It's and look, I hope I'm wrong, and I want Matt McMahon to pull it out and be an NCAA tournament team next year. But unfortunately, it's been three men's basketball coaches at LSU. Now, someone will argue, no, you need to put Nikki Fargus in there.
No.
But, yeah.
So it would be McMahon, and who would be the other two?
Oh, Trent Johnson and Johnny Jones.
Yeah. Well, I guess I'd have to go back and evaluate the Trent era.
Trent Johnson was cooked the minute he opened up in his press conference and said that he would not recruit and didn't believe in recruiting one and duns. They should have pulled the plug on him right there. He had a great team his first year, but that was what he inherited.
Yeah, it's interesting. I'm with you on the McMahon thing. I really am. My goodness gracious, I just need you to make the tournament, and I'm fine. Just get it's a 68 teamer, right? But there you go, Mike Scarborough, TigerBait.com. We'll have you on again soon, and we appreciate you, man.
All right, Carter. Enjoy it, man. Anytime. Talk soon.
All right. How about TigerBait.com? Check him out. True story. Old guy had a gun in a sock. It wasn't even like a holster. It was just sitting there. Veiny leg and a 9mm or whatever it was. So apparently I need to go listen to this Cole Kubelik conversation. Jace Max, LSU 24, Clemson 14. There we go. Now, here's what we're going to do. Next 5 to 10 minutes, I'll answer as many questions as we possibly can. If you super chat, we'll keep this party moving. I'm very fortunate to get to do this. It is so important that you support our partners. Zion Imaging, 360 wedding, but just any event, spin booth experience in Shreveport. Then, of course, our friends at Labor Therapy. Don't forget, join our Patreon. We did just drop an interview with an analytics ace, giving his thoughts on LSU. So, there you go. Side to Ryan, what's up? Who is that in the photo? Who is that? On here, no, Pegasus, never. It's never happened. I'm serious. We've never had a bad conversation. Now, have I done bad interviews? Yes. But then again, you know, I'm very thorough with the guest, right? It's always going to be someone that knows a lot. Hopefully everyone knows a lot or is going to be very entertaining. I've had some of my stand-up buddies on here know not a lick of LSU football, but I've texted them on some of those three-hour streams, and they've come on and entertained. But ask anyone. I've never had a bad conversation on here, ever. Thankfully, that could change. And I'm not saying I'm perfect or anything like that. Normally, I do not know, Samuel. I don't. But, like, for instance, there's probably 95% of total LSU sports-related things under the sun that Mike Scarborough knows about, right? So he didn't ask me, hey, how long do you want me or how many questions? Because he's fine. Like, if he probably could have stayed on here until 9, us talking about LSU-related stuff, and it'd be, you know, somewhat entertaining. So you don't, like, if I go on I'll be honest, I'm doing an interview tomorrow, for the NFL, and I'm going through and doing my NFC South predictions, which is fine. I could go through and break down most of the NFC South rosters, not from back to front, and not to that level, but I could do a pretty good job of breaking down each one of those teams. But it's a sports betting show where they're asking me props and prop lines and stuff like that. So if I give out betting advice, which I do more often in the Discord, if anything, we do have a sports betting expert, if you will, Emil in our Discord, who drops projections all the time in his place. But, you know, I need to do more research for that, especially if I do convince someone with their money, even though it's some stranger. I want to give them the best possible prediction I possibly can, which is why I spend the most time doing this. I will say one of my stronger projections was Auburn, right? But I did change Auburn's projections recently because of the quarterback, Jackson Arnold, but more so because of the first down play calling stuff. Okay. The first down play calling stuff is an issue, right? So if you're going to be a first down, second down, third down, and there's going to be different people that call those plays, guess what? That's going to change how I view your team. Okay. Y'all love me some Roback, man. Dude, these shirts, if I didn't sweat so damn much and ruin these, they're comfortable, man. Let's see. Oh, Sam, you sending me some of these? Let's go. When am I going to give my final score prediction and winner of the game? I've already given out my winner of the game. But the thing is, it's a projection, right? Rarely do I just sit and say, hey, this is what's going to happen. Now, on the game day, I get into like fan mode and I'm like, yeah, we're going to come out there, kick their ass. Yeah. But everything is a projection. Everything is a probability. All right. There have been some instances where I felt very strongly about a team and a matchup. A few years ago, it was 2022, was Tennessee. You know, I picked Tennessee to win close, but I was really confident that they were going to win that game based on how we matched up versus them. And it's what happened, and we were able to turn it around and still go to the SEC championship game. But let's say something like, for me, I feel as if LSU wins this game 4 out of every 10 times. I really do think so. And that's honestly a pretty decent probability, knowing their strengths and our potential weaknesses and knowing that they're at home. Okay. Donald says, you never know when it's going to pop off. But yes, a Clemson offensive lineman, Weston Parks. Dabo Sweeney says he's okay, but he is in crutches. So there you go. Now, let's see here. I can't believe I got to do this. But before I skedaddle, I'm part of a like little viral tweet under DraftKings where they listed all these wide receivers, and they said, just discussing prime, who of these wide receivers has to go? Okay, I'll put it up on the screen. You guys know at the end we give you one kind of like random little rant. All right. It said, all in their prime of these NFL wide receivers, and if you're listening, it's Larry Fitzgerald, Megatron, Antonio Brown, Julio Jones, AJ Green to the far right, DeAndre Hopkins there, and then to the bottom, Andre Johnson to the bottom right, Dez Bryant, Mike Evans, and Odell Beckham. Now, it's important to point out that Andre Johnson and Julio Jones, well, Andre Johnson's the only one here that's already in the Hall of Fame, but pretty much everyone here is going to make the Hall of Fame outside of A.J. Green, Dez Bryant, and Odell's probably not going to make the Hall of Fame. But you guys don't. I've gone on, you know, multiple little diatribes about some of the issues I've had with Odell and LSU. The answer is, and I didn't show you the tweet underneath it, I said, your answer cannot be Odell Beckham when it's discussing prime. In fact, Odell, when you're just discussing prime, and to me, your prime means how good were you at your peak? And for me to consider your peak to be a real peak, you need to do it for at least three seasons, all right? And Odell's three prime seasons are in the Randy Moss category. That is not hyperbole. Like, Justin Jefferson's best three seasons are barely better than that of Odell Beckham's. Barely. And Justin Jefferson's on, like, a Jerry Rice trajectory right here, him and Jamar. And obviously it's a different era, but whatever. And will they play as long as Jerry? That's going to be really tough, but I wouldn't put it past him. But y'all, Odell Beckham's pro peak. I know this is an LSU channel and all of you are going to nod in agreement, but I wanted to do it on some public platform because it is insane to think that Mike Evans' prime is better than that of Odell Beckham. That is insane. Mike Evans has had a better career. He's been a better player. He's been easier to deal with. So on and so on. You could say all of those different things. Odell at his peak clears Mike Evans. And I don't know if it's close. I don't know if it's close. Okay. It's just that simple. It is just that simple. Okay. So Odell Beckham at his peak is as good as really anyone in NFL history. Now we could talk about injuries. We could talk about going to the Browns. He probably was going to win Super Bowl MVP if he didn't get hurt. That's he was tearing up the Bengals. Whatever. Yeah, it's got to be Dez or AJ, right? Odell had the best 50-game start per PPR fantasy stats in the history of the NFL. Ever. When it comes to points per game. Ever. His first 50 were better than anybody's. We'll talk to you soon.
It is! Power Hour. LSU. Boom! Please.
Now is the last time. All right? Look, I'm gonna do it with you. I am going to do it with you. Okay. This is honestly something I probably should have done in the past. Let me go here. Okay. Go to my channel. Okay. Let's go here. Okay. It's gonna be kind of weird because you're gonna see me. All right, you're gonna go to my channel, go to the Weston Davis video. Okay. So now you're going to see me in here, but you go down to the description, okay? Y'all are looking at this, right? Click this link, vote for Labor Therapy, boom, and there you go. That's all you got to do. And then just click vote right there, and there's a few other things you got to fill out. I don't want any of my personal stuff to autofill and you guys come knocking on my window. But there you go. That's it. That's all I got to do. Please go do it.
It is. Pow. Ow. LSU. Boom. Tonight.
We are doing, oh, some point capi boudin, baby. Shout out to my Aunt Marion. Our top super chatters of the evening, Sam and LA Mom. And LA Mom dropped this in. Jared dropped this in as well. LA Mom asked earlier, Can we beat Clemson? Give you a percentage chance. There you go, Ellie Mom. I give LSU a 40% chance. Tonight we're doing some New Roads Boudin. Let's go.